Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 16, Number 12. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was periodization. Periodization is a training system that changes workouts and workout strategies at regular intervals of time. This approach helps prevent stagnation. It reduces injury risk and is proven to enhance athletic performance. In sports competition, principles of periodization are adjusted and made in relation to the timing of important sporting events and annual competition. The goal is to prepare the athlete for maximum performance at specific events and prevent injury. Volume of exercise, skill training, and intensity of exercise are all varied according to distinct periods of time. Now, what are those periods of time? There are three periodized cycles known as the macrocycle, the mesocycle, and the microcycle. A macrocycle describes a full year of training. A mesocycle refers to time periods of 4 to 6 weeks or as long as 2 or 3 months. A microcycle refers to 1 week or 7 days of training and describes the details of each day and each workout. Periodization is the systematic planning of athletic or physical condition. The aim is to reach the best possible performance in the most important competition of the year, which, philosophically speaking, and arguably, is life itself. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is PSN number 39, the future of the human diet. With the advent of science and technology in the field of nutritional medicine, we should all be extremely optimistic about the future. I am. Many phytochemicals naturally inherent in plants will be isolated and proven to be of enormous medical and performance value. More trace elements will be accepted as essential components to the livelihood of our species. And with continued research and advanced food technology, the quality and ingredient spectrum in engineered meal replacements, sports bars, and sports drinks will continue to improve over time. Eventually, out of necessity, the preservation of micronutrients and the bioavailability of proteins, fats, and carbs in a great variety of ratios will be given top priority. As the evidence continues to mount, proving that the consumption of refined food loaded with chemical poisons is hazardous to our species, more and more large corporate food processing companies will cater to wiser and better educated consumer demands. Just think of tobacco and that industry and what's happened from the time it began to today. That's going to happen to food. But it's going to get worse before it gets better. The food quality for now will continue to get worse and worse and worse. It's like a dying animal and its death throes. The industry will fight back and do whatever it can to hold on to the last moment. As industry continues to dump billions of tons of toxic chemical waste into the environment, our air, water, and food will continue to deteriorate. Organic, natural food. Come on. How difficult is it to find? Hello, it's very difficult to find. You got to go way out of your way to find decent food in this culture. Okay, that's crazy, that's bizarre, and it should be the other way around. It should be completely the opposite. So-called natural food, or at least in the conventional sense, in terms of what people think natural food is, it will continue to pose a definite threat to our health. Commercial meat, for example, pumped full of antibiotics, hormones, and petrochemicals, and infected with a huge range of pathogenic bacteria, will continue to surge its way into the mouths of our children and youth, corrupting our gene pool for generations to come. That's right. Bad food corrupts the gene pool. Our food supply, without our knowledge or approval, is being genetically modified right under our noses. And what's more, our governments are cooperating with corporations like Monsanto to prevent the labeling and identification of GMO food. I mean, is this 2017 or 1984? Is the alarming increase in autoimmune disease so widespread today associated either directly or indirectly with the consumption of genetically modified foods? Time will tell, and the truth about GMO foods will eventually surface for everyone to see. It's just a matter of time. 88% of corn and 94% of U.S. soy is genetically modified. Specific genes from one species are inserted into the DNA strands of another and then replicated in mass using agrobacterium. As many as 30,000 different food products on grocery store shelves are now modified. But thankfully, the vast majority of them are food artifacts that men and women dedicated to Optimum Health would never consume. I don't really care myself because I never consume the crap that is modified. And most of what I eat, they're not interested in, because most people aren't interested in health food. They go for the gunk, the fast food, the junk, the stuff that tastes good and smells good. With advances in biotechnology and genetic engineering, Big Pharma is now anxious to patent new methods that can transfer cloned vaccine agents directly into the DNA of our food supply. Imagine that. Soon, no one will know whether or not they are being immunized against diseases that no longer exist. Other foods in our national food supply that are currently being subjected to genetic alteration include potatoes, tomatoes, papaya, sugar beets, squash, peas, and the list grows longer each day. Of course, you have to count commercial meat and dairy too, because the animals we eat are the principal consumers of genetically modified crops. We are what we eat. Or to put it another way, we are what our food eats. The key point here is that we simply don't know what exact effect eating genetically modified food is going to have on our health, short or long term, but it doesn't look good. For certain, the very process of genetic engineering does cause side effects, and many scientists are warning against it. For example, here's a quote from David Suzuki. Most of our current ideas, especially in the area of biotechnology, are going to turn out to be wrong. The rush to apply these new ideas is absolutely dangerous because we don't have a clue what the long-term impact of our manipulations are going to be. End quote. So would you trust the same people to modify your food who also created and lied about PCBs, DDT, Agent Orange, and aspartame? Thanks to the invention of agriculture, one of the greatest challenges we now face lies in the development of high-quality whole food for the masses. But let's also keep in mind that approximately 50% of the world's food supply currently produced each year is thrown away due to excess production, uneven distribution, and general waste that goes on in the homes of millions of North Americans. I mean, just ask yourself this. How much food have you thrown away in the last day or two or week? Now multiply that by millions and millions and millions of people, some of whom waste huge amounts of food. Throughout history, the primary reason for refining sugar and flour was to protect against food spoilage, with storage and shipping as a primary concern. This was done in ignorance before the discovery of essential vitamins and minerals. Today, the driving force for such action is arrogance. Eating spoiled whole food is definitely not a good idea. But what's worse, eating spoiled food or consuming a diet consisting of white bread, ice cream, potato chips, carbonated sodas, chocolate bars, breakfast cereals, canned food, deep fried anything, and sweets galore? I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up. I'm not sure what I would do. My greatest fear of going to prison, for example, is not being confined. It's the thought of having to eat what they feed to inmates. For me, that notion is revolting. What many think they save short-term in buying cheap, lifeless food is more than offset by the suffering and loss of life it creates long-term. This is why micronutrient-dense designer foods for the health conscious will become increasingly popular. They are nutritious, convenient, and extremely practical for families on the run. Incentive to change a lifestyle incongruent with health and its preservation must also be addressed socially with long-term vision. Our medical model must change and make prevention of disease and obesity an absolute mandate. As long as over-the-counter and prescription drugs are emphasized instead of exercise and science-based nutrition, the masses will continue to employ them, as it is common practice to seek an instant remedy instead of spending the time and energy required to identify the cause of the condition and thus fully resolve the problem. It is we, the people, who must take back the control of our own health and destiny, one person at a time, one meal at a time. Education is critical, but without true objectivity, moral ethics based on the principle of do no harm, and clarity of purpose, education alone is woefully insufficient. Even that must change, and it must change from the top. The whole education system has to change, not be reformed, but de-gutted, and we need a new system that elevates the mind of people into a thought process that engages with foresight and thinking about everything that we do with ramifications and how it affects everyone as a group. Knowledge is good, but it must be reinforced with motivation and the desire to change. For some, knowledge is enough. But for the vast majority, knowing in and of itself does not lead to consistent permanent action. For example, if you know intellectually you should exercise and avoid eating crap, then why aren't you doing it faithfully with absolute diligence? CRAP, by the way, is an acronym. C stands for carbonated drinks. R stands for refined sugars. A stands for artificial food. And P stands for processed food. CRAP. Based on global economic trends and priorities, if and only if money is directly saved or gained as a result of choosing a healthier lifestyle, people and physicians will respond. But they have to be motivated economically. The current system, however, doesn't support nor endorse such a concept. Physicians are paid on an outpatient basis. The more sick patients they see, the more they are paid. The less patients they see, and the less operations they perform, the less they are paid. So where does their economic incentive lie? Dietary supplements, exercise, and most alternative healthcare procedures are paid for out of pocket instead of being covered by a holistic, functional, and scientifically sound optimum true healthcare plan. Any investment made into a proven health practice, including exercise and taking supplements, should be 100% tax deductible. People have to be rewarded for doing the right thing. Instead, they are encouraged to violate nature's laws and then told in the end that their health problems are not their fault. For all the corruption and so-called evil blamed on technology misapplied, we must be confident in finding a cure for the, what I call, disease of greed. When the right technology discovered is correctly applied, good things happen. The astronaut, at least at one time, was a fine example of excellent health. Much of what we have learned in nutrition has actually come from NASA research to prepare for their journey into the outer limits of space. Men and women are conditioned physically, mentally, and psychologically to the extreme. They are, in fact, a paradigm of what is possible when it comes to testing the limits of courage, human will, and resistance to the forces of nature. We know what it takes to survive in the most hostile environment known. In fact, it was spacemen who first began using meal replacements and food bars as survival rations. Sadly, when Tracy and I visited the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, and went inside the Challenger space shuttle on display, we discovered a food tray loaded with KFC and Big Mac food replicas made from plastic, wax, and resin. Natural food is no longer sacred or appreciated at the top. In fact, I just watched a live stream video of an astronaut living in the International Space Station. He was eating a hamburger. I like to think of a better future, perhaps something like that depicted in Star Trek. A future where health and the welfare of others come first. A future where starvation and poverty and all the crime related to it no longer exists. But for now, what can we do? Here's what we can do. We can start with ourselves and do whatever it takes to clean up the mess we've made one day at a time. That's it. Just today, just this day, I am going to become a better person. I'm going to behave according to laws that govern my health. And I'm going to rely on those and study them and understand them and then teach them to my offspring and share them with my friends when they ask, Corey, Tracy, Bob, Betty, Alice, why do you look so good? Why are you lean? Why aren't you sick like everyone else? And I'll be able to answer that question. Let's be responsible and accountable for our actions. Let's become unified as a global think tank. Let's use our brains, our big, beautiful brains, and work together to help make this planet a decent place to live. Let's utilize reason, logic, and rational, critical thinking. This is the key to our survival, people. Let's cultivate a better future while there is still time. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Greek Stoic philosopher Epictetus, born in 50 AD. Man is not worried by real problems so much as by his imagined anxieties about real problems.